Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
So we've got this show. It's called The Advertising Show. Concocted back in 2001, and it's got legs. It's been around for a while. Ray Schillens, Brad Forsythe. Welcome. Advertising Age magazine, a sponsor. Visit online at adage.com. And also sponsored by Captivate Network. You can visit them at captivate.com. With Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe, this is a Big Radio Midgets production. Out of Philadelphia, we have a very special guest today. I've got a bio here. Excuse me, that is long. It's four paragraphs long, okay? Mm. But so we'll read only portions of it. And the gentleman's name is Charles Ray Taylor. Ray is the John A. Murphy Professor of Marketing at Villanova. Got his PhD from Michigan State. You can't go wrong there. Also served as a president of the American Academy of Advertising in 2005, having previously served as vice president and treasurer. He's the guy that got away with all the money, okay? Dr. Yeah. Taylor also serves the advisory board of the Center for Responsible Leadership and Governance at Villanova and on the board of directors for Marketing and Society Special Interest Group of the American Marketing Association. And his primary research interests are in the areas of international advertising and advertising regulation. That's paragraph one. We could go on, but I won't at this particular point. I also see, it was University of Texas, speeches at UT Austin. Obviously, that's kind of cool too. So anyway, we've got a great show for you today, and so glad you're here. Just a few moments away, we are going to bring you Gene Bliss, our customer experience, patience and the customer. Seems those two things go hand in hand, right? And a little bit later on this hour, ROI in PR, Shamin Abbas, our activist for excellence, we'll have her on as well. And just a whole bunch of great stuff, too. So we hope you'll have a chance to stick around just a little while longer here on The Advertising Show. What do you have there?
Well, I was going to add, Ray, for those attending summer school at the Murphy School of Marketing at Villanova, required listening here at The Advertising Show of today's interview. So we'd like to welcome all the students that may be tuning in today, listening to
your professor.
And there will
be a test. There will be a test a little bit later on. So.
And you know, occasionally we do have academia. I don't know if that's the right term. Let me want to just cut right to it. Those that walk the halls of scholastic higher learning, we have those type folks as guests from time to time, and it's great because Ray and I get extra credit. I think right now I'm only two credits short of a PhD, and you're
going for the doctorate today. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, in air conditioning repair. So this is good. I like that.
This should work towards that. By the way, real quickly, Shamin, you mentioned Shamin. Was emailing back and forth with her the other day, and she's got a great client called Color On Pro. Color On Instant Eyeshadow. It's a client, and she was telling me about all
Did
this
Did she send us some or what?
Well, that's what you're wearing today, the shade that
goes the mauve color. Well, looks great. Okay. Thank you.
Real. Yes, but Tyra Banks had a three-minute segment on this particular product. Today Show, E! Entertainment, CNN, magazines such as Allure, Elle, Glamour, Cosmo. And, you know, she's done a great job for this particular client, and I wonder how many people listening today, I would imagine many, but maybe not all, realize that when you see a little segment on whether it's a Tyra Banks type program where they're saying that it's just the best product that they think exists today, or whether it's a little piece on the Today Show or whatever, that you've got a great PR firm, not unlike Shamin's firm or some other firm, behind that, that's making sure that that particular client gets that kind of exposure. I mean, that's, you know, the way it works in PR today. So if you have a product out there and you don't have a Shamin type PR person working your product and getting that kind of exposure, either hire somebody or fire your current PR firm and find one that can, right, Ray?
Yeah. That was a nice commercial, too. I like that. But nobody knew that, just because of the way you did it. I like that very much.
Yeah, product placement.
Exactly. And I've got an article here a little bit later on about product placement on news television news shows as well, which is kind of funny. The Verizon Pitbull ad, have you seen that? I haven't seen it, but apparently it's unleashed a flurry of complaints. They what they're suggesting here is they stepped into a steaming pile of complaints from animal lovers over the commercials for the LG Dare phone. But Verizon is sticking with the 30-second ad. The commercial shows a young man trying to obtain the phone by climbing a junkyard fence. When he is instantly greeted by two pit bulls, not a good thing. The dogs with cropped ears and metal choke collars bark ferociously, lunge at the intruder just a hair's breadth away from the phone because their heavy metal chains don't quite extend far enough. The spot has infuriated the Humane Society, which has asked Verizon to pull the ad. PETA, ASPCA, and dozens of pet-related websites have posted petitions, message boards, and the web posting with ad slogans like, "Can they hear us now?" Oh, very interesting. So I don't know. I haven't seen it, but I guess they're suggesting that the pit bull breed is not one to portray and or showcase. It's a different kind of an animal. It really is.
Well, that's true.
It's the Jim Croce junkyard dog, basically.
Well, they say there are no bad dogs, just bad owners. But yeah, you're right. That breed is, you know, known for fighting and all that. But yet they say that, and I don't know this, but they say that particular breed, if brought up properly, is one of the most gentle, loving dogs out there. I don't know.
Okay.
I'd never get close enough to pet one.
One thing they don't have is patience, which is what Gene Bliss is talking about today. Let's listen.
Welcome to the customer experience. Making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome. With your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
Becoming a customer company is a multi-year endeavor. This work is not for the mild-hearted or the quarterly inclined. Don't bail in the first year because the results don't come as simply and cleanly as seeing response rates on a marketing campaign, tracking sales goals, or the number of page views on your website. You need belief and commitment that this is the right course. The company needs to hear from your CEO that their ticker on proclaiming something a success or failure has a much longer timeline here. When things seem to waver, and they will, people will need to hear that the corporate patience exists to stay the course. We have been programmed to worry about lack of results in increments of quarters, and so people will be anxious unless timelines and expectations for results are reset. If the CEO doesn't personally commit to corporate patience, people will see right through it. They'll abandon efforts when their performance rating is at risk for staying focused on the customer stuff that's not yielding results quickly enough for the impatient corporate machine.
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to customerbliss.com.
Our thanks to Gene Bliss here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. About to bring on the air Ray Taylor, John Murphy Professor of Marketing and Marketing and Business Law at Villanova. And we have an opportunity to, well, kind of get into some of the specialties that he is into as an instructor. And it should be very interesting here. So we're looking forward to the interview. A little bit later on, Shamin Abbas will be with us here at the Advertising Show, which, by the way, is powered by Shipple.com. Shipple is a web marketing company. They have a platform that's called Tendency. It's like killer stuff for getting the impressions out there to the right ears and eyes and such. So check it out. It's Shipple.com. Ed and his crew do a great job for the Advertising Show. Hope you stick around. We've got more coming up next.
Here comes another typical commercial. I could get your attention by blowing a foghorn or maybe an awesome scream. But even that doesn't cut through the clutter enough to really captivate your attention. If you're an advertiser and you really want your message to be heard, then reach for the golden nugget of advertising. It's what's called a captive audience. One company delivers this much sought-after captive audience. And believe it or not, it's just the people you want to reach, business professionals and decision makers. It all happens in 23 of North America's largest and most progressive markets. And the captive audience is right there in the elevators of select premier office towers. Over 8,000 high-quality video screens get people's attention with what research proves they want, news and information. It's all combined with your branded message in a way that only this captive audience sees and absorbs. Cut the waste in your advertising budget by reaching just who you want to reach. Don't just advertise. Captivate your audience. To find out more, click on Captivate.com.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth.
This is The Advertising Show with Ray Schillins and Brad Forsyth, and our special guest this weekend is a professor of marketing and business law at the John A. Murphy School at Villanova. It is Ray Taylor. Ray, it is good to have you here on The Advertising Show. Welcome.
Well, thanks. It's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me, and especially, happy to be on a show sponsored by Advertising Age, which I do think should be required reading for every marketing professor.
I like that. Yeah, that's good.
That's interesting you say that. When I first got into business, I had a conversation with what became a mentor, and his one piece of advice early on was, Brad,
get the magazine. Subscribe
to Ad Age and read it cover to cover, and no matter whether you understand what you're reading or not, eventually you'll figure it out. So it's a good compliment to Ad Age. I'm sure you recommend the same to your students. And by the way, speaking of Ad Age, we came to know Ray through a great article that today's guest wrote entitled Lifestyle Matters Everywhere, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that our guest Ray Taylor mentioned in the article. In fact, we'll jump right into it. You say, Ray, with the trend towards a more global consumer, it's time to now group consumers together independent of the country of origin, and you suggest doing this through something you call cross-market segmentation. First off, describe for us cross-market segmentation and how this differs from how marketers have traditionally marketed on a country-by-country basis.
Okay, Brad, yeah, the historically, dating way back, the idea was that marketers would look at each country individually, and you'd identify market segments within those countries, and then you target those segments the best way you knew how. And, this issue isn't really very new. You're probably familiar with Theodore Levitt's article, The Globalization of Markets, all the way back in 1983. But what I do think is different more recently is that there's enough countries that have been economically developed for a long time, and we're seeing in a lot of product categories, I wouldn't argue for every product category, that the needs really are more similar among consumers. And what I'm suggesting is that at a strategic level, and I can elaborate on what I mean by strategic in a minute, that the time is ripe for marketers to target segments that cut across different nations. In other words, the global market, and by global market, and I'm referring to countries where consumers have enough money to afford the product, or at least a substantial number of consumers. The idea is that you would identify your market segments independent of the countries.
Yeah, I'm curious, when and why do you think consumer segmentation based on nationality fell out of favor?
Well, to tell you the truth, I still think a fair amount of it is going on. In the academic literature, you'll see references to cross-market segmentation dating back 15 years or so, and some studies that seem to suggest that it can work. But you don't hear an enormous number of success stories, although at the same time, it's pretty obvious that some of the real marketing giants like, Coke or Nokia or McDonald's do think cross-nationally to a large extent. And again, I do mean at a strategic level. I mean, I don't mean to suggest that when you're getting down and planning the final execution of an ad, that you do the same thing in every country. It might make a lot more sense to use a famous soccer star in Europe in an ad, whereas you might want to use Tiger Woods in the United States or even some other market where golf is quite popular.
So you mentioned, depending on the product category, and of course fast foods is an example, but you illustrate, I think, appropriately so, that the luxe goods product category seems to be a product category that global market segmentation across the board seems to work well. Why do you think the luxury market in particular happens to have a better way of appealing on what you call a cross-market segmentation?
I do think there's a pretty universal need among at least a segment of people in economically developed societies for prestige and status. And as I mentioned in that article, it's pretty remarkable that in Tokyo, for example, 90% of women young women in their 20s own a Louis Vuitton. And I just spent a month in Seoul teaching at Korea University, and it's just remarkable the brands you'll commonly see, particularly the young women, you know, wearing. Coach is very popular there, Chanel, even brands that you think of as relatively new, like Michael Kors that has emanated out of the United States. It's pretty remarkable to see how popular luxury goods are, and it is the case now that a lot of these luxury good manufacturers are finding that half or even more than half of their sales come out of Asia. So they've really been forced to think more globally.
Yeah, I saw that statistic. What was it? Upwards of 50-60% of all consumers in Japan own a Louis Vuitton bag. Is that correct? Am I getting that number properly?
Yeah, well, it's actually 90% of women in their 20s in Tokyo. And Japan is a good example of a more collectivistic culture where those types of trends can take off very quickly. But at the same time, my argument is there are identifiable segments that cut across cultures that you can identify and target. And one of the segments my friend Eunju Ko from Yonsei University in Korea and I, we published an article in International Marketing Review where we identified four fashion consumer segments. One of the segments we called the conspicuous consumer. And these are people who really are big on top brands, and they're not going to shop around as much. They really like the attention and the prestige that a very high-end luxury brand brings.
Out of Villanova University, our special guest here on the Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth is Ray Taylor, John A. Murphy Professor of Marketing, and Business Law here at theadvertisingshow.com. Glad you're listening, and we've got more to come. And we hope you stay with us right here at theadvertisingshow.com.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
What walks downstairs alone or in pairs and makes a slinkety sound? A spring, a
This is The Advertising Show. Ray Schillens, Brad Forsyth. There are those who are the future of advertising, and that's what we're talking about today in a roundabout way. Villanova University. Ray Taylor is the John A. Murphy Professor of Marketing and Business Law there. And Ray, it is such a pleasure to have you here at the Advertising Show.
Oh, it's thank you very much for inviting me. It's my pleasure.
Well, and we're honored to have you today, Ray. You mentioned the four types of fashion lifestyle segments, and we're going to talk a little bit about that in just a second. But first, let's talk a little bit about the study in a general sense. You conducted it at Villanova in conjunction with the University of Seoul, Korea, I understand, which some of the findings were published in, as you say, in a recent International Marketing Review publication. First of all, when you approached the research, Ray, did you set out to investigate what you were sensing was particular consumer habits that you were speculating on, or were you more looking for just purely fact-finding?
Yeah, it's a good question. And, you know, basically I've been following this the so-called debate over standardized advertising versus localized advertising for a long time. And I have to tell you guys, I think practitioners know better, but in the academic literature for too long, people write papers where they argue that there's two camps, that there's somehow a group out there of advertisers that thinks everything should be standardized all the time, and another group that thinks everything should be tailored to local markets. And if you really read the studies that have been done, the reality is that what we're learning from the academic literature, and a lot of times the academic studies are based on surveys of practitioners, so I would give them some weight, to be sure. What we're really learning is that strategic aspects of the marketing mix tend to lead to better financial performance if they're standardized, whereas the executions very often do need to be adapted. I mean, you know, for one thing, you might have different regulations in different countries. You may have different, consumer tastes and preferences. You know, a good example of that is McDonald's is doing fairly well in China, but they have a much the Chinese prefer chicken as fast food over hamburgers pretty handily. So McDonald's needs to adapt the menu a little bit, but at the same time, in their advertising, they're still emphasizing that they appeal to families. They still have the golden arches. They still emphasize that it's that it's fast food and it's consistent quality, and so forth. So the idea was going in and looking if you can follow standardized strategy when it comes to segmentation. That was the origin of the study.
Yeah. So you're not by any stretch suggesting totally ignoring cultural differences, certainly nuances, cultural nuances, and in some cases even with the McDonald's example, which I think is a great example, you integrate certain cultural nuances into an overall marketing and branding effort. But yet you say, if I'm hearing you correctly, that you can have a common thread running throughout a global message that helps promote the brand across all nations and cultures, and yet fine-tune it a bit from country to country to bring in cultural differences.
And for those eating hamburgers in China, it tastes like chicken, so that's fine.
That's right. Well, let's talk a little bit. I'm sorry, go ahead, Ray.
Oh, I just wanted to say, yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah. And, I think that's a very good point, because if you tend to think that one size fits all in a global marketing effort, that would be a mistake. But to not have an overall message that's hitting through across a global marketing effort, I think, is also a mistake. Let's talk a little bit about the four types of fashion lifestyle segments. You mentioned conspicuous consumers, and I think you pretty much nailed that, and everyone understands that. The other three, information seekers, sensation seekers, and utilitarian consumers, I'm curious, did you find that there was any age or socioeconomic strata in each of the consumer segments that I just mentioned? For example, I would think perhaps the utilitarian consumer segment might skew a bit older than the other groups and may tend to be a little bit more conservative by nature.
Yeah, that's correct, and skewed a little bit male as well. One other thing that was real noticeable, though, is the conspicuous consumer. It went down a little bit lower into income than you would think. And, you know, the idea here is that people who buy expensive fashions because of wanting to show status and appeal to others are very often willing to spend a pretty hefty proportion of their money on fashion merchandise. And I should say, you know, the information seekers, incidentally, are another segment that they're much more willing to shop, and they value quality and trendiness, and are really willing to get out and shop around. And we found that they're more likely to read fashion magazines than the conspicuous consumer. And he actually had a fair number of men in the information seeking segment, whereas the sensation seekers, who view fashion much more holistically, and they're concerned about color coordination and design and tastefulness. The sensation seekers really are a segment that trust their own opinion of fashions, and again are a little bit less likely to just follow what they read in a fashion magazine, and they use their own judgment. They tend to actually buy, have bigger wardrobes, according to our study.
A little more upscale, I would guess, the sensation seekers.
Yeah, the incomes were higher. Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because when you describe the conspicuous consumer being a little lesser, lower income level than you would tend to think, I immediately thought of the character on Saturday Night Fever, the John Travolta character that had a blue collar job, but yet spent all of his money on nightclubbing and his clothes. And of course, you look back on that and say, you spent that much on those clothes?
And those clothes? Yeah, exactly right. Let's take a break here on the Advertising Show. We got more coming your way here in just a moment. Stay with us.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
A Sunliner convertible moving in sunlight and shadow.
So glad that you're able to stick around here. It's The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, and our special guest out of Philadelphia, it's Ray Taylor, John A. Murphy Professor of Marketing and Business Law at Villanova. Lots of good stuff to talk about, Ray. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks. I'm having a great time talking to you guys.
Well, we're thrilled to have you, and I want to jump into some subject matter that's separate of the article. And by the way, if you're interested, check out adage.com, and you'll see and do a search on what is entitled Lifestyle Matters Everywhere. And again, the byline will be Charles R. Taylor, as opposed to what we're referring to as Ray Taylor, just to help you on that search. But it's a great article, and you can find that at adage.com. Ray, let's talk a little bit about new media. I think a lot of people that listen to the show understand certainly what the various new media channels are that are out there. But yet, when it comes to global markets, what trends are you seeing when it comes to new media habits out there?
Well, first off, it's new media really is here to stay, and with respect to the internet, dating back to the middle '90s, we were reading all these predictions about how the internet was going to take over everything else, and that of course didn't prove to be true. But the real turning point, as far as I'm concerned, was about 2004, and following statistics that I get from Advertising Age. Primarily, we see that search engine advertising really has made the internet evolve into a major medium. And it's not just search engines anymore, but the success of internet advertising is leading to a lot of speculation as to whether some other media, new media like advert gaming, SMS, or the user generated content type of outlets, something like YouTube or Facebook, can grow in the way that the internet did.
Yeah, well, you mentioned user-generated content, and they're still working on the business model, I think, and trying to figure out how to make money. What role do you think user-generated content will play in the future as far as advertising on websites?
Okay, well, first off, I think that the future of user-generated content involves very highly targeted target markets for the most part. And the trick is going to be, you know, finding target markets that are appropriate for the advertising because people are sufficiently interested, but at the same time not alienating the user. I should mention, and again, I get this example of an Ad Age article, but I love the website inthemotherhood.com, which is a website for new moms. And if you go there, and I'm not a new mom, as a professor, I went there to check out and see what happened. And it's really very neat that new moms can go there and read about crazy mother-in-law stories, like the worst piece of advice they got from their mother-in-law, or the worst tantrum the baby's thrown, or something like that. And this is also well written up in an Ad Age article. But it's wonderful. You can go there, and they developed a little television show. Fran Drescher stars in it, and they run ads in it, and it really is a good example of targeting new moms in a way where they're going to actually want to see the content. You know, I do think with new media in general, and I've done a few, you know, SMS, advertising is a real hot topic now, and I've done a few media interviews pertaining to it, and what everybody wants to know about is privacy and the whole spam issue. And I think advertisers have got to be very, very sensitive to that with new media use. People really, you know, if someone's, I don't know if you guys have Blackberries, but whether you've got a Blackberry or a cell phone, the consumer really views this as their personal space in a way that they don't view television as their personal space, or even, you know, outdoor advertising or something like that.
Ray, unfortunately, we are out of time. It always goes so quickly when we've got so much great content and a lot of great response as well. Hope you've enjoyed yourself, and thanks again for being a part of the Advertising Show.
Yeah, very much. Ray and Brad, you've got a great show, and plan on listening a lot in the future.
Thank you much. We appreciate that. On the Advertising Show, it's Ray Schillings, Brad Forsyth, back with more in just a moment.
Smart marketers are discovering a new and better way to get creative solutions. One company got solutions for a corporate identity program in less than 36 hours. The second got solutions for a public relations campaign that won 2 international creative awards. The third got solutions for a direct marketing campaign that got a 30% response rate. These marketers are finding creative solutions in a better way. The open ad way. You go to openad.net and gain access to a global brain trust of nearly 11,000 creators. Within days, you get 20 or more creative solutions, and you pay only for the solutions you use. It's a radical new idea. You owe it to yourself to discover what it can mean to have creative solutions on demand. Find out now by going to openad.net, openad.net. Creative solutions on demand.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillings and Brad Forsyth.
We are the men of Texaco. We wear the Texaco star. We like to think of Texaco.
Our thanks again to Ray Taylor, John A. Murphy, Professor of Marketing, Marketing and Business Law at Villanova. Brad, I think we learned something today. What do you think?
Well, I think we did, and you know, as you already said, it's always great having a great guest like Ray, and he's obviously, you know, well informed, as you'd expect a professor at a major university to be.
And well spoken, too.
Yeah, well spoken, he's articulate, and gosh, anyone that's a student of his is lucky to have him as a professor.
No kidding, and he's from Detroit too. What more could you possibly want, right? How about
Shamin
Abbas? That we could do that right now if you'd like. Our activist for excellence, ROI in PR. Where is it? Does it exist? If it does, it's a good thing. Let's find out.
And now it's time for Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional. Now, here's your host, the uncompromising Shamin Abbas.
Grassroots PR efforts can be just as effective, if not more, at driving business. Pitching isn't the only method of grabbing attention for your client. There are other grassroots methods for publicizing your client that can have a great effect and put you in direct touch with the end user of your client's product or service. A savvy PR firm will integrate these other methods into their holistic approach to garnering publicity and driving sales. The most popular and effective grassroots PR approach is the event. Now, when I say event, I'm not referring to the obvious grand opening, although those are very often very effective. But not every client comes to you at the outset. Sometimes they come to you as an already established business, but needing to increase traffic to that business. That's when you and your team need to sit down and brainstorm ideas. One really productive approach is to create an event that centers on your client but offers more. PR firms often combine events for multiple clients into a single happening that has broad appeal and benefits to everyone. The key is coming up with a theme that seems fun and natural. Why not ask one of the spas that carry your client's makeup line to host an event that will bring out their regular patrons, your client's contacts, and your own list of people who love to attend parties? The underwriting costs can be split and everyone wins. If your client has something people need to try, think about getting special offers or sample sizes into goodie bags at the right events, be they charitable or red carpet. The goodie bag has become a standard expectation, and it often puts your clients in the hands of highly qualified potential customers. If you need to get bodies through the door, an event that brings out the area's movers and shakers can do wonders. Sure, you'll end up with a few people who always show up for the free drinks and hors d'oeuvres, but a crowded celebrity bartending event at your client's restaurant will make those in the vicinity wonder what all the fuss is about, and they may feel the next time they eat out that they need to try that place where all the exciting people eat.
You've been listening to Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional, with host Shamin Abbas. Shamin is president and founder of Shamin Abbas Public Relations, a full-service agency providing local, regional, national, and international media relations, special event production, and inventive promotion, with offices in New York City and West Palm Beach. To learn more, visit ShaminAbbasPR.com. That's ShaminAbbasPR.com.
Shamin, thank you so much. As always, being a part of the advertising show here with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth, our Activist for Excellence, all about ROI in PR, ASAP, and all that kind of good stuff. So, yeah. Brad, what are you holding there? What do you have there?
Well, you know, I've had this for several weeks now, not that many, but more than a few, and I've been wanting to talk about it. It's the MPA Kelly Awards for Outstanding Magazine Advertising, and if you haven't received one, you ought to seek it out. I'm sure you could find it online if you do a search, but it's basically, you know, as it says, the awards for magazine advertising. I got to tell you, magazines have taken it on the chin for a while now, and, you know, it's a medium that is not doing so well as a category, but yet, sure. You know, here it is, very first ad here, Procter & Gamble for Oral-B Floss, BBDO New York, creative directors David Lubars, Bill Bruce, both former guests here on the show. You spin through some of this. Nike, of course, you would expect to see awarded as one of the finalists by Wieden and Kennedy. And just you thumb through this, and my goodness, Ray, it's just a load of just fabulous magazine ads. And, you know, it's just really too bad that you don't see this kind of advertising throughout all publications today. But for a category that's, you know, as I said, not something that you hear a lot of good things about in terms of just a media category. There still are some magazines that are doing well out there with great advertising, as we see here in this year's Kelly Award finalist. My goodness, it's these are all great ads, and these agencies could be, and who else? Blatter, Bruner, and there's another good BPH New York. They should all be proud of their work. And again, these are the finalists, and Congratulations. To all of them.
Best of luck, too, as well. Talked about product placement on television, especially in television news. The Fox affiliate, KVVU in Vegas, will sit with cups of McDonald's iced coffee on their desks during the news and lifestyle portion of their morning show. The anchors rarely touch the cups, so what they're saying is it's a 6-month promotion meant to shore up advertising revenue. They told the news staff it will not influence content. Has to be another McDonald's frozen beverage, right? Or something like that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There was a shootout today at Burger King.
That would be really bad, as a matter of fact. You know?
Wouldn't it?
But at McDonald's, everything was just hunky-dory, so go there instead.
That's risky, I think.
That's weird. It's crossing the line a little bit. Advertising Show brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit them online at adage.com. And by Captivate Network. Visit them at captivate.com. If you enjoyed the show, tell a friend. If you didn't enjoy the show, don't tell a friend. Okay, tell us. This is a Big Radio Midgets production.